Hello, everyone. Welcome to Animoca Brand Podcast. This is a new version. This is the first time that our research team are talking about our recent research work through Animoca Podcast platform. And then my name is Ming Run. I'm the head of research at Animoca. With me also have Andrew Ho, our data analyst, our recently published report on ETF. Related crypto, and I also have Andy Ouyang with us.
And before we start, just a quick reminder to refer to the podcast notes in the disclaimer that this podcast is an educational resource intended for informational purposes only. Nothing said on this podcast should be construed as financial advice, solicitation, or recommendation to buy or sell digital assets or any financial instruments. You should consult your own advisors as to legal, business, tax, and other related matters concerning any investment. Animoca Brands, its affiliates, or podcast participants may hold positions or otherwise have financial exposure to digital assets, companies, or projects discussed on this podcast. Views expressed by podcast participants are their own.
Okay, yeah, let's just get started, right? So, Andrew, I think you've spent quite a bit of time on this topic, right? So, before we dive into all the detailed knowledge and the analysis that we have done, maybe you can give us some background, like why? Why does it matter, right? So, why ETF is an important thing for the space of Web3 and crypto?
Yeah, sure. So, I think basically, crypto ETFs are extremely important right now for digital asset adoption because they are a regulated investment fund traded on stock exchanges, just like how you would buy and sell and trade TradFi assets like stocks and other types of conventional ETFs. So it's a wrapper that's easily accessible, it's regulated, and it's very familiar to traditional investors. So maybe, you know, if we look at crypto native traders, they may not be as interested in crypto ETFs. But if we look at people who are used to trading stocks and other ETFs on stocks and bonds to build their portfolios, then I think this is a pathway that they can get exposure to crypto without having to go through the hassle of getting a wallet, storing the crypto, learning how to go on chain and do all the crypto native things. Right. So I think that's one of the key reasons why crypto ETFs are really taking off right now.
May I interpret it as crypto ETF is the main way to draw traditional institution investors?
Yes, absolutely. That's what I would think, because for ETFs, people are using them in the traditional sense to build portfolios from a strategic and tactical asset allocation point of view. They're not really using it for speculative gains in general. There may be some cases, but I think most of the cases that we look at, when an investor, an institutional investor, or even a retail investor actually, when they buy an ETF, whether it's crypto, Bitcoin, Ethereum, or a stock or a bond ETF, or even a gold ETF, they're thinking from a top-down portfolio allocation point of view. So I think this is exactly why crypto ETFs are a great vehicle for them to build a portfolio. And actually, ETFs in general, this is a pretty significant market. There's 14 trillion AUM, that's asset under management, globally for all ETFs. And it's been growing at around just under 20% CAGR over the last 5 years. So this is a high growth market in general.
Yeah, so versus crypto, haven't reached 4 trillion yet, right? So we are somewhere between 3.5 or 3.8, depending on the market. So it looks like ETF still have its quite a significant upside for the overall investment community and for the projects, right? So how large do you think the market will be, right? Will that be a significant part of the asset allocation industry, right, in the near future?
So we project the global crypto ETF AUM to potentially exceed $1 trillion in 5 years' time. To give you a bit of context, for example, the global ETF AUM for all asset classes is around 14 trillion right now.
Mm.
And also the total global AUM of the entire asset management and wealth management industry is around 130 trillion at the moment. So for our projection of 1 trillion crypto ETF AUM in 5 years, we're basing that on a few key assumptions. We believe that and assume that the total asset management industry AUM will continue to grow as it has over the past few years.
Yeah, of course.
To around 180 trillion at the end of 5 years. And then we also think that an increasing portion of that AUM will become willing to invest in crypto. And we think maybe around 30% will be willing to invest in crypto.
That's based on the early adopter ratio.
Yes, yeah, exactly. So that's based on the S-curve adoption for innovative technologies theory.
Makes sense.
Which basically states that any new innovation will go through stages of adoption. For example, some of the stages of adoption will be the early adopter and then the early majority, then the majority, and then the late majority. So we think that in 5 years' time, crypto will still probably be within the early adopter, getting into the early majority phase. So we think 30% based on that adoption theory is a reasonable number. And then of that 30%, we assume that they will allocate around 3% of their portfolio to crypto. And they will do this.
That 3% is because?
So this is based on what we've been seeing in the market and information from large asset managers like BlackRock, JP Morgan. For their clients, for example, they typically are recommending around 1 to 5%, I would say, of the portfolio to be allocated to
crypto. So that's your middle case.
Yeah, so that we're basically taking sort of the middle line of that range that we're seeing in the market. And then we assume that these investors will then be channeling their crypto allocation mainly through ETFs because they could channel it through other vehicles. But we think that because ETFs, as we mentioned, are regulated, easily accessible, and very familiar to them, we think that possibly more than 50%, maybe around 70% of that allocation will be done through ETFs. So that's how we arrive at 1 trillion. And I think this is also to give a bit of context, gold spot ETFs, which, for example, Bitcoin is often compared to, right, as an alternative. Gold spot ETFs globally, it took around 8 years after the first launch to reach 100 billion in AUM. Now, crypto ETFs are already at 170 billion.
After two years.
Yes, if we take the launch of the spot ETFs in the US as the starting point, right? They were launched in January 2024. So just within 2 years, they've already exceeded what gold achieved.
When was the gold ETF launched?
Around 2 decades ago.
Ah, okay. So there are some inflation factor to be adjusted, but still it's quite impressive.
So after 2 decades, 20 years, right now, spot gold ETFs are at around 320 billion AUM. Mm. So just if you compare that to, let's say, the Bitcoin ETFs in the US.
Almost there.
It's almost there. So I think if the crypto ETFs keep up this pace, it's reasonable to assume that they could potentially surpass or even reach parity with gold spot ETFs.
So the 1 trillion for the middle case, what's your optimistic case?
The optimistic case, I think if we tweak some of the assumptions, let's say we assume investors allocate more of that portfolio to crypto, and for example, if they are allocating at the high end of the range, let's say 5% instead of 3%, and also if we take an optimistic assumption that, let's say, 40% or close to 50% of global AUM is willing to invest in crypto, then we could be looking at close to 3 trillion dollars or even beyond.
Yeah.
So, and also bear in mind, trading volumes for spot Bitcoin ETFs in the US are actually at parity or even at times exceeding the trading volume for the gold spot ETFs right now. So it's really underscoring how the institutions and also retail investors are really adopting the ETFs as a viable investment vehicle for their crypto exposure.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So then the naturally, I think the next question will be, what exactly is the ETF? Right. So it's something that we heard about it. But what exactly it is, right? What does it take to get one? And so I think it's for you to elaborate.
So ETF quite literally stands for Exchange Traded Fund. So the definition is very literal. It's an investment fund that invests in underlying assets, in this case, a cryptocurrency like Bitcoin. And this fund is traded on a stock exchange. Right? And we just mentioned earlier that you can then buy and sell it and trade it just like you would any stock within the opening hours of the stock exchange, of course. So, but there are a few nuances. So when we talk about ETFs, and this is kind of the terminology that we see all the time in the media, particularly for the spot crypto products in the US, it's usually referred to as ETF, but actually they fall under a larger umbrella of ETPs, which is exchange-traded products, because within that umbrella, you have the ETF, but you also have things like ETN and ETC. So ETNs being exchange-traded notes and ETC being exchange-traded commodities. And these are usually, in the crypto context, these ETNs and ETCs are typically existing in Europe only. So US doesn't have a lot of these at the moment. Yeah.
It's more of a regulatory difference, or it's more of a preference of the market?
From the regulatory perspective, in Europe, for example, most conventional ETFs in the TradFi asset class that are available to retail investors, for example, are actually registered and governed under the UCITS framework. It's basically Europe's, I guess you could call it the gold standard for retail funds in Europe, right? The US equivalent would be the 1940s Act, but for Europe to UCITS. But under the UCITS framework, there are certain strict criteria governing how you structure the fund or the ETF. There's risk mitigation. If you're a UCITS ETF, you have to be diversified. You can't just hold one asset in your ETF. So I think when Europe was first contemplating crypto ETFs, because of this UCITS restriction, they had to go into the ETN and ETC route to offer these products. But this could change because UCITS is being under reviewed right now in Europe to see if crypto can be inserted into the UCITS framework. If that's the case, that would be, I think, a significant event, because that would open up the European UCITS market to crypto, and that is a $17 trillion market, so also a very big market there.
Andrew, you just said the UCITS. Maybe give our listener a little bit more background knowledge about it, what exactly it is.
Yeah, sure. So UCITS stands for Undertakings for Collective Investment in Transferable Securities. It's basically the primary standard for retail investment funds, including the vast majority of traditional ETFs in Europe. So as we mentioned before, due to requirements under this framework, for example, diversification criteria, ETFs that focus on a single asset, such as Bitcoin, are generally difficult to approve in Europe under UCITS. Consequently, as we just mentioned as well, this has made ETCs and ETNs the sort of the main crypto ETPs.
Okay, got it. Yeah. So I think we can continue along two directions, right? Let's maybe go on one first, which is worldwide, right? So to what extent ETF are adopted and how large are those markets, right? Where are the major buyers, right? So I think people just talk about the those ETFs in the US mostly, right? So I suppose that's because it's the largest market.
Yeah, definitely US is by far the largest market. So globally, if we look at the total AUM of crypto ETFs in the whole world, that's around 170 billion US dollars AUM. And the US accounts for 140 billion of that. So that's nearly 90% of the whole AUM in the world. So definitely US is the AUM powerhouse. But I think if you look across the pond to Europe, it's a distant second with 15 billion AUM, but it has a lot more variety. So in the US, basically most of that 140 billion AUM is the spot Bitcoin ETFs, right? That were approved just in 2024, January, very recently. There's also the Ethereum spot ETFs, but that's a very small portion in the US. And there are also some synthetic-based ETFs in the US that are actually tracking some altcoins like Solana. But if you look at Europe, the physically backed ETPs, should I say, there's a lot more variety there. So for example, there are ETPs covering Aave, Algorand, Aptos, Litecoin, Cosmos, Solana, of course, XRP, Uniswap. So there's a whole range of altcoin crypto ETPs in Europe. And then the rest of the world, I would highlight probably Canada. Canada is an interesting region because even though the AUM there is small, it's only around 6.4 billion. It was actually the first country to approve a spot Bitcoin ETF, even before the US.
So that's the test bed for the North America financial market.
Yes, exactly. I think it could be a place where the US regulators are looking at to see how sort of the altcoin ETFs are operating, because Canada has also approved a spot Solana ETF recently. So US, as you said, US regulators could be looking at Canada, seeing if it works. If it's successful, they might say, okay, that's great. That would may expedite their approval process in the US.
Yeah, got it. So yeah. You also mentioned the difference between the spot and the synthetic ETFs. Supposedly Europe is most synthetic, right? So they can track all the different variety without actually assessing the asset itself. But then may I assume that the majority of the US market ETF are actually spot?
Yeah, that's correct. So yeah, in the US, the majority is the spot Bitcoin ETFs and a bit of the Ethereum as well, Ethereum. In Europe, it's a bit nuanced as well, because as we mentioned, Europe's ETPs are mainly ETNs and ETCs, right? Now, for example, let's dive a bit deeper into what these mean, right? So ETN, exchange traded note, is actually a debt security. So basically the ETN issuer is giving the investors a debt security. So it's promising to pay you, let's say you're the investor, you invested in a Bitcoin ETN from some European issuer like CoinShares, right? CoinShares is promising to pay you your principal back, and on top of that, the return of Bitcoin at the maturity date. So you're actually investing in a debt security.
And so there's no downside risk.
Well, if the issuer goes bankrupt or they cannot pay the principal, right, then you would lose out. So there is a counterparty risk there. And you may be thinking, so how does this issuer get the return of Bitcoin to give you, right? So often they will enter into swap agreements with another bank or another financial institution. This counterparty will give the issuer the return on Bitcoin in exchange for a fee, right? So there's a lot of layers of wrapping, I would say, and also derivatives like the swap, right? Yeah. And there could be multiple parties involved in this whole ETN structure. So there is counterparty risk, and it's not as clean as a spot crypto ETF, where you just know that the ETF has got gone into the spot market and bought the Bitcoin and holds it directly, right?
Mm.
So in Europe, these ETNs are typically debt securities, right? However, to mitigate that counterparty risk, some of these European ETNs actually do hold as collateral the physical Bitcoin. So if they are unable to repay your principal for whatever reason, you could have recourse by receiving the Bitcoin that they're holding as collateral for you. So that's why sometimes we see them being marketed as physically backed ETNs in Europe.
So I think the takeaway is that you have to look twice before you decide what you buy.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, personally for me, I would prefer a cleaner product like the spot crypto ETF, which is why they're so popular right now and why there's so much noise and anticipation around, you know, launching spot crypto ETFs. And I think Europe will probably try to do this as well, because I think from an investor point of view, it is more attractive to know you're holding something that directly holds the crypto and not some convoluted sort of structured product that has a lot of counterparties, right? Even though it does track the price, but I think it just is a safer and operationally cleaner structure. So, yeah. And actually, I mean, I think right now we have a good representation of different types of investor profiles on this podcast. So, you know, our colleague Andy here, right, is probably the most crypto degen of the team. And not saying he's degenerate in a moral sense, but just he's very crypto native. So I'm just wondering, from your point of view, from a crypto native degen point of view, would you find a crypto ETF more attractive than, let's say, directly holding Bitcoin?
Nope. Sure. Well, it's pretty simple, right? If you hold Bitcoin, right, essentially you own the Bitcoin.
Yeah.
But if you buy an ETF, someone holds that Bitcoin for you, right? And also they take a fee cut. So essentially, I think for crypto native people, they already have the knowledge to buy token on chain. So they can walk away from the regulation stuff and then they can just acquire any token they want. So I think that would be much make sense to most of the crypto native people. But if you can get more exposure to traditional, exposure, then probably ETF could be a much better, product for crypto native people. For example, if it is a mixed product, let's say it is Bitcoin plus gold or plus any TradFi products, then I think in terms of the portfolio management angle, I probably would invest in such product. So that's why I think if we take a step back from portfolio management side, I think that would be much make sense to the people. Yeah.
So far the most attention has been on spot ETF in the US, right? So and then it's mainly around BTC, the Bitcoin, and Ethereum, the ETH, right? So those are the two. And then I believe I remember correctly, the BTC is still leading in terms of the AUM by a lot,
yep,
right, relative to others. So I think the one interesting topic is that something that I think that people track the movement of the crypto price closely as well is to looking at the inflow and outflow of the ETF funds, right? So the in related to the BTC and ETH. So how significant it is, right, in terms of the ETF's ability to impact the price movement of those like underlying asset, right? Taking BTC and ETH, for example.
Yeah, so we did a quantitative analysis based on the data we collected. In short, there is a correlation on both Bitcoin and Ethereum. So for Bitcoin, the correlation is about like 0.34. So for Ethereum, it's a little bit lower, it's 0.13. So we think that they are likely just one of the many factors that contributing to the price movement.
Yeah, but both are in positive correlation, essentially. When there is an inflow, we see a price that tend to move up, right? Certainly among other noises, right? But the general direction is quite clear.
Yeah, so, I mean, we also looked at, as Andy mentioned, the R squared value, which is basically looking at if there's any explanatory power, right? Do the flows explain the movements in the price, and how strongly do they explain the movements, right? So the correlation is telling us the direction, if there's a similar direction, and the R squared is telling us the explanatory powers. So we did find very low R squared values as well for both Ethereum and Bitcoin. So what this tells us is basically flows do explain some of the movements, but not the majority. So as we all know, Bitcoin and Ethereum prices can move dependent on many factors. One of the biggest factors could be the overall market sentiment, right? Macro, geopolitical risk, things happening in the real investment world would affect risk appetite across investor profiles. So when risk appetite is low, then we might see prices go down. When risk appetite is high, then we might see prices go up. So there are many factors affecting Bitcoin and Ethereum prices. The flows from the spot ETFs are just one of many.
So then, okay, it's quite clear that they're both in the positive correlation zone, and then the BTC ETF has a bigger impact than ETH. Why do we think it's driving it?
Yeah, I think we did some other very interesting quant analysis too. We found that, for example, the spot Ethereum ETF AUM is at a much lower percentage of the Ethereum market cap compared to the same case for Bitcoin. And we think that's because Ethereum has been performing weaker than Bitcoin over the past few years, and there's been less investor enthusiasm for Ethereum compared to Bitcoin. I think the market probably perceives Ethereum's investment case as more complex, right? Or less of a pure digital gold play. Mm. For example, we all know that Bitcoin has been benefiting from this huge tailwind of the macro narrative of money printing, inflation, etc. And Bitcoin is digital gold, right?
Yeah.
So it is perceived to be able to preserve genuine purchasing power, just like gold. Whereas Ethereum is more of a smart contract blockchain, as we know. So it doesn't really have that clean kind of digital gold narrative behind it. So I think the market probably is not thinking of Ethereum as attractive as an investment case as Bitcoin. And also, there's another big factor here. For the spot Ethereum ETFs in the US, for example, there are no staking yields.
Mm.
But a big reason why people invest in proof of stake blockchains or projects like Ethereum is to get the staking yield as well, which Bitcoin doesn't give you. But if you buy the Ethereum ETF, you're not getting that staking yield. So that, I think, also arguably diminishes their appeal, right, compared to direct Ethereum ownership. Although, having said that, that could change because recently, I think maybe 1 or 2 months ago, the SEC, which is the US regulator for securities, it recently put out a guidance that certain proof of stake staking activities should not be considered as a sale of securities. So this is why I think in the future, the Ethereum ETFs in the US may be able to add the feature of staking and give the investors some kind of staking income and yield.
Yeah, that might have implication to other crypto tokens, right? That in the still in the application pipelines, because pretty much all other tokens are more in the camp of Ethereum than Bitcoin, right? Bitcoin is kind of its league by its own.
Yeah, definitely. And also Ethereum is upping its marketing game, right? We heard that they've established their official marketing arm, right? Which is called Etherealize. It's run by a Wall Street veteran. And the aim of that marketing arm is to establish an institutional investment case for Ethereum to the Wall Street audience. And what I've been seeing is that the new motto, right, for Ethereum is digital oil,
yeah,
as opposed to digital gold for Bitcoin. So they're really trying to position themselves as digital oil, so something with a bit more utility,
yeah,
which makes sense because they are a smart contract platform.
So maybe we can move on beyond the world of BTC and ETH. Let's talk about the future ETFs, right? So I think we see a very long list of applicants, even just by looking at the US alone, right? It's already a pretty long list of applications. So in terms of actually for a crypto project to get their token or other digital asset converted into a ETF, what's the whole process is like, right? So for people even just on the side and then watching the news, right? What is the regular pace that we should expect?
Well, I think the first step is obviously an ETF issuer who wants to put a crypto ETF product on the market in the US, they will need to get regulatory approval, right? Yeah, and in the absolutely. US, yeah, in the US, the main regulatory entity that does this is the SEC, the Securities Exchange Commission. So they would have to file an application, including a prospectus, to the SEC, and then wait for the SEC to review it and approve it. And the SEC may not approve it. They could take quite a long time. So the official window for the SEC, after receiving the prospectus or the filing application, is I think 250 days. That's the official time window that they have to respond. But this could, in reality, sometimes be shorter. For example, if the SEC has no problems with the application, they might respond very quickly before the 250 days is up. But if they have issues with the application, they may ask the issuer to give more information to them to review. They may want to talk to the issuer. So that could drag out the whole process. It could take even years before the ETF is approved. So it really depends on how comfortable the SEC is with that specific application. And I think with crypto, obviously, when the first spot Bitcoin ETFs were being contemplated by the regulator, crypto in the US was under a very hostile regulatory and political regime, right? So it was the previous administration, previous chairman of the SEC, and I think we all know that they were not friendly towards crypto. So they took a long time to approve these first Bitcoin ETFs. But I think at the moment, with arguably a lot more friendly administration and political climate, it's possible that the approvals could come quicker this time.
Yeah. And you also mentioned earlier this 33 versus 40 Act related to regulating the ETFs. Can you see more a little bit around that? Because it's I think it's quite relevant to the application process.
Yeah, in the US, this is quite an important debate right now in the regulatory context, because when a crypto ETF is being registered with the regulator, there's basically two main pathways it could take right now, right? So at the moment, all of the spot crypto ETFs in the US, like the Bitcoin and Ethereum ones, they have gone under the 1933 Securities Act. And they have not gone through the 1940s Act, which is where most traditional ETFs covering traditional asset classes like bonds, stocks, or certain commodities have been registered and approved under. So why this is important is because if crypto ETFs were able to be registered and approved under the 1940s Act, this could make them more accessible and more attractive to investors and the market, because the 1940s Act is the gold standard for investment funds, including ETFs in the US. So there are a lot of investor protection measures built into this framework.
Yeah,
similar to the UCITS framework that we just discussed in Europe. It's basically the gold standard for funds. for retail investors as well. So in the US, it's the 1940s Act. And a lot of distribution platforms and financial advisors in the US, for example, would be very comfortable to put a 1940s Act ETF or fund onto their recommendation list or their distribution platform to potential clients or investors.
When explain purchasing ETF, crypto ETF to their customers.
Yeah.
That's the difference they're going to make.
Right? Yes. If the crypto ETFs were able to go under that pathway, then this could potentially be more accessible and be more attractive to a larger pool of investors. Having said that, there are some crypto ETFs in the US that have registered under the 1940s Act, and these are synthetic futures-based ETFs, not the spot ETFs. And why they're able to go under the 1940s Act is because if your ETF is registered under the 1940s Act, the fund must be structured as an investment company that collects or pools money from different investors, right, into the fund, and that money is used to buy securities, right? And because the futures-based crypto ETFs are actually buying futures contracts, they're not going out into the spot market to buy the underlying Bitcoin, Ethereum. They're buying futures. And futures are, by definition, securities.
Yeah.
So they're able to go under the 1940s Act.
Mm.
And how do they get around the diversification requirement, though? Could be a question I think people may be top of mind. Because the 1940s Act also has requirements under regarding diversification. You can't hold just one asset. Ensure that the fund is sufficiently diversified to protect investors.
So a BTC-only ETF will not qualify a 40s Act, matter how safe BTC that asset is.
That's right, because of this diversification requirement. And how the futures Bitcoin ETFs get around this is usually what they do is they operate a Cayman Island subsidiary.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll own 25% of that Cayman Island subsidiary. That 25% Cayman subsidiary will then invest in the Bitcoin futures. Because the 1940s Act stipulates that at least 75% of the fund assets have to be diversified. Right? Not all the assets, but at least 75%. So the futures ETF will operate this Cayman Island subsidiary, right? They only own 25% of that Cayman entity. The Cayman entity will buy the Bitcoin futures, but the rest of the 75% of the assets of the fund will invest in diversified money market instruments. Because when they invest in futures, it's on margin. To get a notional exposure, they don't need to buy the full exposure. They just have to go on margin. Right, and they hold the cash, which is diversified. So that's how the Bitcoin futures ETFs have managed to register under the 1940s.
Yeah, it's basically a synthetic product, so you have a lot to you can do a lot, right? Underneath the hood, right, to meet the requirement.
Yeah, and we're actually seeing some new issuers, ETF issuers in the U.S. trying to test the SEC. For example, Rex Osprey, they are applying for, I think, some meme coin ETFs like Trump coin ETF, Melania coin ETF. Yeah. And they've actually applied under the 1940s Act. And in their prospectus, they've said that they will hold a mixture of spot and synthetic derivatives. So we're not sure how this is going to play out, whether the SEC will approve these types of structures, but I think the important thing to take away from this is that issuers under the friendlier regulatory climate right now are really pushing the envelope, coming up with new and novel structures to test to see if the SEC will approve it.
So then on the other hand, right, so we have seen, well, we have seen BTC and the ETH on the spot ETF for quite a while now. But over the last maybe 1 year or so, we haven't seen any new spot ETF entering the market, right? So what is the holding off right? So you mentioned like the SEC's attitude towards that, right? So there was some, maybe there's some government change and so on. Why we haven't seen it for a very long time? And then what do you think are the important or even critical factors might indicate if next crypto token will be approved in the form of spot ETF?
Yeah, definitely. I think we might be seeing a potential altcoin season for US spot crypto ETFs because the pipeline is dominated by altcoins right now. We're seeing coins like Aptos, Avalanche, Litecoin, Near, Solana, Sway, XRP, Tron, even Pangu, which is that ETF application will be holding a mixture of the token and NFT. So there's some very interesting names in the pipeline. I think what the SEC will likely consider when they think about which ETFs to approve first, I think there are a few main factors. So first is the size and maturity of the underlying coin. So for example, market cap size, which could be a representation or reflection of size, this is important because it often suggests a more established and potentially less volatile crypto, right? Which can be a positive signal for the SEC, who is concerned about market stability and manipulation, right? They don't want an ETF on the market with an underlying asset that's being heavily manipulated in the underlying market, yeah. Right? So they don't want that because they want to, I mean, their remit is to protect investors. So usually a larger coin, a larger market cap size coin indicates a potential less volatile, less susceptible to market manipulation, right? And also liquidity will play into this as well. So if the coin has a higher trading volume, right, that could indicate to the regulator that there's a deeper and more active market for the crypto. And then maturity, we looked at it in terms of if the crypto has a longer trading history, let's say 4 years or more, that could indicate that it's gone through sort of various market cycles. It's proven that it can be resilient through different market cycles, that it's not just going to disappear after a year or two, right? And there's also been enough time for price discovery in the market as well. So I think this could offer the SEC some comfort regarding the crypto staying power and its predictability. There's also a couple of other very important factors. A regulated futures market, if that already exists for the crypto, that could give the SEC comfort in terms of whether there's another regulator who can share in the sort of surveillance sharing effort to detect and deter fraud and manipulation. So if the SEC is the only regulator doing that, they'll feel a little bit not as comfortable. But if, let's say, the CFTC, right, which is the Commodities Futures Trading Commission in the US, is and the CME, which is the largest derivatives exchange in the US, if there's already, let's say, a Bitcoin, Ethereum regulated futures in that market, then the CFTC is already monitoring that, right? So the SEC will think, okay, there's another entity helping us to do the surveillance, and so that therefore potentially lowers the risk of fraud and manipulation for that asset. So right now, for example, which cryptos do have a CME futures product? Well, it's Bitcoin, Ethereum, Solana, and XRP, only four.
Oh.
Yeah.
So that's a short list, shorten the list significantly.
Yeah, which is one of the reasons why we think Solana and XRP stand a good chance of being approved next.
Yeah.
Right? Because they are already regulated futures on the CME. There's another factor, which is the made in USA factor. We think that if, you know, the origin or significant presence of a crypto project in USA, that could possibly influence whether it gets approved quicker or not, because this might be due to expectations of closer regulatory alignment, easier oversight accessibility, or a preference for domestic innovation. For example, the US President Trump has openly indicated it's he and his administration supports US-based domestic crypto companies, right?
Mm.
Maybe not just crypto, but across all industries. He's really trying to push this made in USA narrative. So I think projects that are considered to be made in USA could stand a higher chance of getting approved. Also, asset managers or crypto projects with direct access to the SEC, for example, through consultation
yeah.
panels, these asset managers and these types of crypto projects with the direct access, they may also be able to influence the SEC indirectly in some way. So having considered all these factors and some other factors as well, we think, as I just mentioned, Solana, XRP will likely be approved next. There's for the other altcoins, I think there's a wild card factor because some of the altcoins, let's say Litecoin, right?
Mm.
It's considered to be quite similar to Bitcoin, proof of work,
yeah.
if I'm not mistaken. The SEC may consider it a non-security because when they were contemplating whether to approve the spot Bitcoin ETFs back in 2024,
yeah.
The previous chair, Gary Gensler, he viewed Bitcoin as a non-security commodity. This helped to get the Bitcoin ETFs over the line to be approved. So if we look at a coin like Litecoin, which is similar to Bitcoin, this could influence the SEC. If they think it's not a security, then just like Bitcoin, this could increase its chances. Even Pangu, that's an interesting case. If they view it as just a collectible, right? The Pangu NFT is collectible.
Yes.
It's not a security. If that's the case, then maybe Pangu has a good chance too. So there are a lot of factors playing into this. We think it's going to be interesting, and let's wait and see.
Yeah, so I think just to continue on this subject, right? So I think it's I think we already see a few strong indicators, right? So the that may suggest which one will be the next approved ETF in the US market. But interestingly, there's also a rising trend for public list companies to directly acquire crypto tokens as a strategic reserve, which indirectly allow investors to tap into the upside of crypto world as well. Right. So what is your view in terms of, let's say, I'm an investor that I won't actually get some upside from crypto market without getting to a account on Coinbase, for example. Right? I would rather do my business in a stock exchange. Should I go to the left to acquire ETF or go to the right to buy the stock of a company that is taking crypto into the strategic reserves?
Yeah, I think this is an interesting question. I think if we look at the situation right now, let's take altcoins.
Yeah.
As we mentioned, there are no spot altcoin ETFs in the US right now.
Yes.
In the pipeline, yes, there's a lot, but we don't know when and if they'll be approved anytime soon. So at the moment, if you were a traditional investor and you don't want to directly go and hold the crypto,
mm-hmm.
right, and you want to hold an altcoin, let's say you want to get exposure to an altcoin, you can't do that through the ETF route at the moment. You may be able to do it through the public company route, as you mentioned, because we are seeing a few companies pop out now
mm.
that have announced altcoin corporate treasuries.
Yes.
So it might make sense for an investor to look at a public company. And I think for a public company, they do not need to get approval to buy the altcoin, whereas an ETF issuer who wants to launch an altcoin ETF needs to get approval, as we have just talked about at length. They need to get approval from the SEC and the regulator and go through the entire process of review. So a public company can acquire altcoins on the market, and then they can basically replicate what MicroStrategy has been doing
yes.
for the past 5 years very successfully. It's attracted a lot of attention. It's created a lot of value. So I think for an altcoin exposure, the public company wrapper is a viable pathway right now. And because of this financial engineering that a company can do with their altcoin holdings, where they can issue more new shares or issue debt or convertible bonds to raise money to buy even more of the altcoin. And if the company's shares are trading at a multiple premium of the underlying altcoin held on their balance sheet, this can enable them to buy more and more altcoin at a cheaper price and increase the altcoin per share for the shareholders. So it's essentially, for the investor, a leveraged play on the altcoin price return. So for investors who are a little bit more speculative and who desire access, easier access and exposure to an altcoin upside, then yes, I think the public company wrapper will, the public company wrapper will continue to see increased demand and attention.
Sounds like those two are for investors looking for different investment cycles, right? So for the longer term, probably ETF will still be the longer term holding. ETF is still the better vehicle for investors. And then for the shorter term, just catching a wave of crypto, then probably the strategy reserve will be the route to go, sounds like.
Yes, it's possible. I think for the public company wrapper, obviously as an investor in the stock, you are getting exposure to the altcoin, but you're also getting exposed to other types of risks at the company level, other types of idiosyncratic risk at the company level. So for example, if the company own operations independent of the altcoin holdings are not doing well, that could lead to financial health deterioration for the company. It may even go bankrupt, in which case then as an investor of that company who was only looking for the altcoin exposure, you're also getting affected by the operations.
As a shareholder, you get paid the last, so you are pretty risky to get.
So there are different types of risk, whereas if you hold the ETF, you're not exposed to those types of specific risks.
Maybe let's talk about the one more topic, right, which is the ETFs outside of the US, right? So we have heavily discussed the US ETF market, but maybe a little bit on the Europe and Canada. Any other ETFs or ETPs, right, so that worth to pay attention to?
Yes, I think in terms of other regional hubs for crypto ETFs, Hong Kong as a major financial center in Asia is worth looking at. It was one of the main and first exchanges within Asia to offer spot Bitcoin and Ethereum ETFs. And the regulator here, the SFC, has been quite proactive and I think also quite crypto friendly in pushing out innovations and drawing up clear regulations for companies to come into Hong Kong and operate a crypto business, right? So that's been quite attractive for Hong Kong. The AUM is actually quite small. It's only 700 million.
Yeah.
So it's very small compared to, let's say, US, Europe, or even Canada, right, which are in the billions of dollars. So, and also in terms of diversity, it's only a Hong Kong exchange is only offering Bitcoin and Ethereum spot ETFs. I would say Hong Kong has a history of trying to innovate in ETFs. Whenever the US, for example, has come up with some kind of new ETF on a new underlying asset class, Hong Kong tends to try and follow.
Mm.
What I've observed historically, however, is that trading activity in Hong Kong ETFs has actually been quite low.
Mm.
I think there are a couple of reasons for this. One, I think, is if you're a sophisticated or institutional investor in Hong Kong, you actually have easy access to the US market and the US ETFs. It's not a big problem for such an investor to invest in a US ETF where there's a lot more choice, a lot more liquidity, trading volume, and AUMs are a lot bigger. Then the second factor is for a retail investor in Hong Kong, in my opinion, I do think the profile of retail investors in Hong Kong are more speculative.
Yeah.
They do tend to gravitate towards single stock speculation.
Mm.
And ETFs as an investment to them may not fit their risk profile. It may be a little bit boring for them, so to speak. So I think Hong Kong is an interesting case. It does try to innovate and launch ETFs. And also, as we've seen with the crypto, they are being a first mover in Asia for that. But it remains to be seen whether the demand for the Hong Kong listed crypto ETFs will be significant in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do have a question. So for our research report on crypto ETFs, I'm just wondering if I could ask Andy maybe, what were some of the biggest challenges doing this report?
Yeah, because I think I'm the one to, you know, collect most of the data. So unlike crypto data, so most of the data are quite segmented. If we wanted to gather information from Hong Kong or different district, we need to, you know, gather information from those government websites. And most of them do not offer APIs. So we need to collect them, manually. So I think that would be the hardest thing for us.
Yeah, I think so too. And also for me personally, I think since ETFs in general are actually a well-established investment vehicle in traditional finance, the typical go-to data source is the Bloomberg terminal. But as we didn't have easy access to Bloomberg, I do think it was a bit of a challenge to source the data on the crypto ETFs, particularly since we were trying to map the global landscape and not just the US spot ETFs, which actually there's quite a lot of data on. So globally, I think that was a challenge to source data. But we still managed to find high quality data sources. And I think, you know, we used that to put together a good report. And then also finally, I guess, what do we think about doing another report on ETFs in the future?
Absolutely. Right. So yeah, I think we should totally do it. I think the ETF, as the time goes, there will be a lot more development. Right. So in maybe a few months, we'll be able to see if our analysis framework give us a correct prediction, right? So probably if we have seen more altcoin ETF get approved, the excitement will come back to the ETF again, right? Just like a year ago with BTC and the ETH, right? So then they will make more people interested in more project take action on it, then they will definitely have more things to cover.
Yeah. Great, so stay tuned.